Warning, Star Trek From the Holodeck contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
Lock it alone!
Fire.
Holodeck 3 program is reinstated.
Open sesame!
Commander Klingon vessel. We are energizing transporter beam. Now.
Welcome, everyone, to Star Trek From the Holodeck. I'm Michael. Ho, ho, ho. And in the studio with me is David. Hello.
Hello, everybody.
We have been... This is the longest break we've taken.
Yeah.
On this show, right?
Oh, yeah. Because, like, I wasn't kidding in our Unimation Zero. It feels like we were stuck in the Alpha Quadrant.
Yeah, but we're back for a little while. Well, actually, just for one show. This will be our last show of the year. And then we will come back for our coverage of Starfleet Academy. Fingers crossed that it's going to be good, right, Dave? I mean, I will say, not to set the mood. Well, maybe to set the mood. This is going to be a relatively positive discussion,
yes.
Dave. But I will say, since this new era of Star Trek started, Dave, in 2017 with Star Trek Discovery, this is the only series where I've watched the trailer and I'm like, eh.
Yes, I have to agree with you because like it says a lot that basically for me, I've watched the Star Trek trailer where my highlights are not the things that basically we should be focusing on.
No, I'm watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds season 3 trailer. And remember we were all talking about how great that was. That was an amazing trailer.
That was an amazing trailer.
It got you super excited. All of the trailers for Discovery, great. And let's talk about though specifically the very first trailer, the first footage that we see. Discovery, everybody was excited. Picard, everyone was excited. Strange New Worlds, everyone's excited. But it seems like with Starfleet Academy, for me at least, I don't want to speak for others, I just wasn't, I'm not sold on it.
Yeah.
And that's concerning because I'm usually an easy sell when it comes to Star Trek. I'm not one of those angry, hate everything Kurtzman era Star Trek fans.
Especially, you know, because of the past trailers for Starfleet Academy have not really hooked us. It's like
they're not bad.
They're not bad, but it's kind of like without any context, we don't really know what your show is truly about.
We don't know what it's about. The characters seem uninspiring.
Who's your lead? Like it is, I believe it's Holly Hunter, right? That's actually...
I don't know if she is the lead.
Exactly. I'm like going, is she the lead?
I don't know what your show's about. Your backdrop isn't that exciting. Like Starfleet Academy has never been an exciting premise for me in general. They've been talking about doing Starfleet Academy for like how many decades, David? It's been so long they've been talking about doing this series and finally we're getting it. But even... I think it was like late 90s, early 2000s. Am I correct? When they were talking about possibly doing like a Starfleet Academy idea.
Oh, yeah.
And even then, I'm like, why? That doesn't sound interesting.
It doesn't sound interesting.
You're on Earth, and I suppose you can make it interesting, but it's to seek out strange new worlds, a new civilization.
Exactly.
Now, if this is them trying to rejuvenate and change Star Trek, which is the thing of the... That's the moment we're in right now, culturally speaking, reinvigorating franchises, changing them, seeing what works. We saw that recently with a couple horror film franchises, Predator, to name one, and it worked in their favor. But that's a very that's a rare thing to try to change a franchise and go in a different direction. Now, Deep Space Nine, I would say, did change Star Trek at that point when it came out mid-90s. That was a big game changer. That was a risk. And ultimately, it did pay off. There were a lot of disgruntled fans, a lot of people that hated on Deep Space Nine. But in the end, it has a wonderful legacy. People love it. It's remembered fondly. Even the people who didn't like it have gone back and they appreciate it. Starfleet Academy just doesn't punch yet, that trailer. And it does have me concerned. But we'll get into that, David, because I do feel like the Star Trek overall, the future of Star Trek seems to be bright. At least I hope so. The franchise is undergoing what I would call a broad multi-tier revitalization, you know, across film, television, and franchise branding. So on the cinematic side, Paramount has fully committed to a new continuity and new characters under Goldstein and Daly, which we'll get into that as well, signaling a decisive break from the Kelvin timeline. At least that's what's being suggested currently. And also a renewed attempt to rebuild Star Trek on the big screen, which is a must. That is absolutely something that they need to be doing. In television, Paramount Plus is refocusing its Trek strategy. Strange New Worlds is approaching a definitive conclusion with season 5. And Starfleet Academy is being positioned as the next flagship, already in production for a second season before its premiere. So that is a clear indicator of a studio's confidence. If they're already going in and shooting the second season in the midst of merger turmoil and potential additional buyouts, the fact that they are still involved, that is a good sign, David. If there's something that's not that great looking in terms of quality, this is when you cancel those shows. You just say, we're done with this. That it happens when you're doing mergers. And the fact that they actually doubled down on Starfleet Academy during this time, that does say a lot.
Yeah. But that's the thing, though, Mike. On a flip side of that, it's only Starfleet Academy. We're coming in into almost kind of like a crossroads with Star Trek with, just like you said, there's a change of guard going on now. Because in the very beginning of Kurtzman's era, you had multiple series like coming in, and basically they wanted to inundate everything with the idea of let's slam content in there.
They were going to saturate
the market. New
sexy streaming platform that was Paramount
CBS
All Access at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what they were going to do. They were going to saturate. But David, I will say, yes, it's just a series, but they're undergoing a broad multi-tier revamp. So yes, a series might end up being slimmed down a bit for other things. So simultaneously, the franchise is expanding into new audience segments through Scouts. It's a preschool targeted animation. There is also that 60th anniversary campaign that seems to have gotten very quiet.
Very quiet.
Which is very concerning. I had thought that they were going to be all out there doing stuff. Perhaps 2026 is when most of the festivities begins. According to recent news, that does seem to be the case. They have a campaign. It's a multi-platform brand event supported by high visibility partnerships such as Legos.
Mm-hmm.
For example, they are going to be releasing the very first Star Trek Lego set.
Yep.
And then they also have a parade level promotions. Legacy actors, of course, continue to publicly contextualize their roles. So overall, David, the franchise seems to be transitioning out of its peak streaming saturation phase and repositioning itself for, I suppose, broader cultural longevity. You know, you have a fresh cinematic reboot, a strategic consolidation of television properties, expanded merchandise and youth outreach, and of course, the large-scale 60th anniversary celebration designed to reassert Star Trek as a multi-generational brand heading into the next decade. So, David, there is a lot going on in the world of Star Trek, and this is what I have been saying and advocating for a very long time. Do not throw all of your Star Trek eggs in one basket.
One basket.
And that's what they've been doing for the better part of the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're realizing there is no money to be made in streaming. Let's look at other avenues where we can make our money while also building new audiences. That's why they're doing this whole movie thing. Now, I'm not entirely happy with the movie idea, yet. I'd like to hear more. I'm concerned.
You, me, both.
Well, David, this is like now the seventh group of directors that they have hired and then fired. Well, they haven't fired these guys yet.
They haven't fired them yet.
To do Star Trek. So there is a new film in development by Jonathan Goldstein and John Francis Daly. I'm not familiar with their work. I believe they are the directors that did the recent Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, they are.
Movie.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen that movie, but
I have multiple times and I can tell you, I have faith in it.
Okay. I mean, isn't it kind of silly?
It is. It is supposed to be. It's silly, but there's also some heart to it. That's the thing that basically kind of won me over with the movie in general. Not just as a D&D fan, but also kind of like the fact that there was some heart written into the movie. And if Goldstein and Daly can actually bring that type of nuance, that's what really makes a Star Trek movie special. I mean, if you look at all the TNG movies, a lot of the TNG movies have that kind of that core heart element.
I think my problem is that these aren't sexy names. These aren't the types of names that get people into the theater.
Yes.
So that means they're going to have to rely on marketing and a fucking snazzy trailer. That's what they're going to have to rely on 100%. Because the names of these directors, they're not going to be selling tickets.
Yeah.
Now, plot details are being kept under wraps for now, according to Deadline. But sources say Goldstein and Daly's film is a completely new take on the Star Trek universe and not connected to any previous or current television series, movie, or prior movie development projects. So, this, of course, means that the Chris Pine-led sequel, the much-aligned would-be Star Trek IV, is no longer even in the cards.
Yeah.
It has been officially canned. So we are done with the Kelvin timeline, at least as we know it. Now, they say that this is not going to be connected to any previous or current television series, movie, or prior movie development, but that isn't a negative. Some people are concerned they're going to go against canon. This is going to be a Kelvin timeline 2.0. But you have to realize that's a description that could be used for nearly every Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
That's what made Star Trek movies so successful in the past, is they were standalone adventures. And if you knew, you knew. Like, if you were a fan going in, you would understand certain things. But the movie was written with a larger audience in mind.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they're saying that, I think that's not a negative. That could be actually a positive, because that's what we need. The same thing they did in 2009 with the J.J. Abrams reboot. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about the Kelvin timeline and coming very close to breaking Star Trek in terms of continuity. Yeah. Luckily, J.J. Abrams, you know, finangled and did a lot of, gymnastics to make it work. And for the most part, I'm fine with it. But I'm talking about financially successful. The 2009 Star Trek was a huge financial success, and it brought in scores of new audiences. Unfortunately, they squandered that success, but that movie was a success that did build and flesh out a new Star Trek following. So if that's what they're going to do here, that's what we need, David.
Yeah.
We need something that can stand on its own. And what have I said also? We need to move past what we know. We have to move past Kirk. We have to move past Spock. If we hope to grow and we hope to keep this franchise alive, we have to move past TNG. We have to move past Deep Space Nine. We have to go into uncharted territory, introducing new faces, new ships, new ideas.
That's the thing that I think I'm hoping. One of the other strengths that Goldstein and Daly have is, like, look what they did with the Spider-Man franchise. Specifically with their initial script with Homecoming, they were able to do and revitalize a IP in Spider-Man and not focus on what the telltale things that everyone knows about Spider-Man. Instead, they introduce new elements. They introduce new things that can make this Peter Parker different than all the other Peter Parkers? And that's what I'm kind of hoping that Goldstein and Daly can do with Star Trek. I want them to actually bring in brand new characters. Give me new characters for Star Trek.
Did they write the...
Yeah, they wrote Spider-Man Homecoming. And I just wanted to actually double check and verify that. But that's what...
But
that's
how much of that is John Watts?
John Watts. And that's the thing that is going to be interesting, because what I've seen so far, Spider-Man Homecoming and Dungeons and Dragons, from what they have been able to do, those are the simple elements that I'm looking at when I'm seeing them being attached to the Star Trek franchise. And what are you going to bring to the table? It's like one thing if you were a Tarantino. Me and you have talked about it in the past, and when word got out that Tarantino was interested in making one of his last movies ever a Star Trek movie, and we were all like going, we know what Tarantino can bring, and these are the elements that he can bring because he's a Tarantino. We know what he's capable of. With Goldstein and Daly, it's kind of like we can see a little of the potential that they can bring. It just really depends if they can carry it. Like what you said, Spider-Man Homecoming, was that Goldstein and Daly or was that more John Watts?
Yeah, I don't know much about them, so I'll reserve my judgment. But what I'm looking for are those interviews. When they start talking about what they're doing, that will determine whether or not the movie... I'll know. I'll know, David. Oh, yeah. You know I'll know.
Oh, no.
If I hear them say anything that's a little eh, I'm like...
But the problem is, Mike, I mean, we've had this issue before when we've had like various filmmakers talk about, oh, this is my Star Trek. Noah Hawley. Noah Hawley had a shot.
When that's a good example, though, Dave, because I was like, okay, Noah Hawley, when they announced him. But then I started hearing him talk when he was talking about his ideas. I'm like, this guy understands it.
Yeah.
He only spoke for like, I think it was like 60 seconds. And he talked about what Star Trek is and the themes. And I'm like, okay, dude, you're allowed. You're fine.
You're allowed.
You're going to be okay. JJ doesn't really talk about anything.
No.
Like he kind of annoys me because he's too agreeable. Yes. I know there's a lot of people who didn't like Star Trek. You know what? And you're probably right. And the ones who loved it, you're probably right too. What does that fucking mean?
Can you at least tell us something, JJ?
Yeah, the guy is the worst politician of all time. You know how like politicians are, you call someone a good politician when they can dodge and weave? Yeah. He just dodges. Doesn't bother to weave.
No, that's the thing. He just sits there. He sits on the line and refuses to move.
So I will reserve judgment until I hear them talk about Star Trek. I'm interested in hearing their intellectual thoughts on what Star Trek is and their ideas. And once I hear that, and hopefully it's positive, then I will begin to speak more on that. Now, also, there is... Did you realize that Strange New Worlds is pretty much done? Meaning season 4 has been filmed for a very long time. Season 5, I believe...
is the last.
It's underway currently?
Yes.
I do not think as of this recording they're done filming season 5, but it's pretty much done. So after that, it's over for Strange New Worlds. And now we're going to be facing, for the very first time in a long time, one solo series. If Starfleet Academy only gets 2 seasons.
Yes.
That would mean Starfleet Academy runs, the first season runs the same year as season 4, Strange New Worlds.
Yes.
And Starfleet Academy runs its second season at the same time as the final season, of Strange New Worlds. 2027 could be the end.
That's the thing. It's like,
it could actually be the end of streaming for Star Trek.
That's why when I look at all the series that have come so far, there's so much potential for to continue on. I mean, like, me and you have discussed about how, like, Strange New Worlds honestly could branch out at the very end, and we could see a reboot of the original series.
I don't think it's going to happen now.
Exactly. But it's kind of like in that realm of Star Trek Legacy with Picard, where we thought they were going to do it, but now we know that they're not.
Yeah. Never say never, Dave, because if Starfleet Academy comes out and it's gangbusters, it makes tons of money, Strange New Worlds continues to hold on, retain its audience, and is critically acclaimed as it is, and then the movie comes out, suddenly we're, whoa, Star Trek everywhere. Then I could see them saying, okay, you know what? We're in a good spot. Let's continue, say, Starfleet Academy, or let's go ahead and start producing a new Star Trek series.
Could you imagine if, like, in 2 years' time, Mike, and I want this to be recorded because just in case it happens, because I just thought about it. 2 years from now, if suddenly Strange New Worlds and Starfleet Academy ends and they make the announcement that a Star Trek movie is going to be released, and it's going to star the actors from Strange New Worlds that have taken over the roles of the characters. You have Ethan Peck. You have.
You think they would do something like that?
I just thought about it.
I mean,
can you imagine if they do that?
Okay. The reason why they won't do it, David, is because it would be too confusing. You're going to have three different cinematic Kirks.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, I don't know if we're ready for that.
To actually basically put a stamp and saying, okay, this is Paramount's new initiative for Star Trek. We have, and it'll be only movies with the actual characters.
I wouldn't be against it.
Like brand new movies of Spock, Kirk, McCoy.
So you just do like whatever, a new Star Trek movie, and it happens to be Paul Wesley's Kirk and Ethan Peck's Spock.
And think about it.
There's no explanation. It's just like, hey, there's a Star Trek movie, and you think audiences will be okay with that? You don't think they'll be confused?
I don't. Well, here's the thing.
If they're not in the know like we are, they roll their eyes and think, oh, another reboot?
That's the gamble I think Paramount would take, because especially since we've already said in nauseam how these are new people from Paramount coming in, and they want to make their own stamp on everything. What is a bigger way of doing it than basically saying, okay, here's these new, because they've mentioned about some of their other IPs of Mission Impossible doing something without Tom Cruise. And just doing another Mission Impossible, but it's a completely different movie.
Yeah. I mean, listen, anything's possible, David, because with David Ellison taking over after the closing of the merger at the end of, I believe it was August of this past August, there is a noticeable focus under a unified leadership,
yes,
of not just Star Trek, but Paramount in general, and what Paramount is really trying to do. And I believe we might have said this during a discussion. We talk so much about movies and TV, and I forget where I say it, but they had mentioned during a press release, Paramount, that their focus is no longer streaming, that it's there still, and they'll do it, but they are predominantly focusing on theatrical films. That's what they want to do. So you have this new leadership on board, and they also understand that the best way to make your money in terms of the best bang for your buck is to create, what's the word I'm looking for, David? Additional tie-ins,
yes,
to something successful. It's the Marvel thing. It's the Star Wars thing. Lucasfilm has been doing it for literally years. I call it the waterfall effect. They have the movie that comes out right here is way up high.
Yes.
Okay. At the top of the crest of the waterfall. And then you have your streaming focus content. So you're more focused and streamlined with your streaming shows, not having random Lower Deck seasons mixed with Prodigy, mixed with Discovery, mixed with Strange New Worlds, which when you look at that retrospectively, that was them throwing spitballs at the wall. They were trying to figure out what was working. Now they have an understanding, and they realize we have to focus our streaming content. And then, of course, the broad franchise revitalization under that unified leadership. So that seems to validate your thought.
Yeah.
Nothing is I don't think anything's out of the realm of possibilities at this point.
I mean, here's,
because it's all about success. Is if the revenue dollars are there, if money is to be made and it looks good, then they will never say no.
Exactly. And but the thing also that I put out there is the fact that if you were to actually in 2 years' time make the announcement that we are going to do a Star Trek film and it's going to be a Kirk film, a Kirk Spock film, and you have two young actors who you can literally put into those roles and keep them there for a decade, and Paul Wesley and Ethan Peck.
Listen, David, don't steal my ideas, because what I'm going to do, I'm going to write a script. I'm going to adapt Spock Must Die, that novel from the 70s, and I'm going to retitle it, and it's going to be called Spock vs. Spock. And it's going to be a small, medium budget film, and A24 is going to produce it in association and partnership with Paramount. It's supposed to be a small, like, philosophical take. Tell me there wouldn't be a following for that.
Oh no, there would be. There absolutely would be.
This is why when Tarantino talked about doing Star Trek, I was for it. Some things concern me about Tarantino. and there's a part of me that's glad that he's not directing a Star Trek film, because there's always that risk that he can just completely break what we know of Star Trek.
Oh yeah, because that's what he does. That's,
yes,
that is his strength.
Yeah. But I also think there is money to be made going down that route. Not every Star Trek movie needs to be a big giant tentpole, massive budget film. And also that doesn't mean that they need to be shitty straight to streaming movies either. They could do something that DC's doing, making big budget superhero films, but then smaller, more indie style
series like Peacemaker.
Well, not just series, but like Batman itself.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And then the upcoming Clayface. They're doing that with Clayface, which, yeah, they're saying is going to be very much like an indie style film. So listen, if they can do it with DC and there's an audience for that, then why don't we do things like that with Star Trek as well? Make some smaller Star Trek films, make a big Star Trek film. That's where I'd like to see the experimentation. Why streaming? Experiment, but be safe. Pick your right budgets and see what works. Not everything needs to be a $200 million movie.
Yes, not everything, but at least have a backbone. You know, like, if you want to be different from Kurtzman, you don't want to be spitballing stuff. You want to have a strategy.
I think you should just piss in the wind.
Just piss in the wind.
That's what Kathleen Kennedy does over at Lucasfilm. Oh, man, David. That's going to be cut. So what else do we have to talk about? Merchandise, David. Merchandise.
The power of merchandise.
I cannot believe it's been 10 years, because we talked about the 50th anniversary 10 years ago. Yep. Oh my God, we've been doing this way too long. So the official Lego Star Trek set was announced. It's a 3,600 piece model of the USS Enterprise NCC 1701D. And it is available right now to order, but it is on back order.
Yes, it is.
And it's, I believe, $399.
Yes.
I have no complaints about this whatsoever. No
complaints. But really? Really? I thought you'd be complaining because, my God, we have to buy another Lego set.
Well, yes. Yeah, for jokes, yes. You know, someone said, and this is where I'm probably a little more subjective and I'm in my own head when being a Star Trek fan. I saw a meme pop up, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 months ago, and it was titled, "Can we all just admit now that Star Trek The Next Generation was peak Star Trek?" Meaning that was the peak and that everything else has been a slow degradation since Star Trek The Next Generation, leading to where we are currently. I don't agree with those types of negative interpretations of the current Star Trek climate we are in. However, David, in terms of popularity, yes, Star Trek Next Generation was peak Star Trek. So it does make sense that the NC-1701D would be the first massive Lego set.
Yes.
But come on. Can we get at least a 7 of 9 starter kit? Can we get like...
Oh, no, Mike. You missed the freaking Black Friday sale this past Black Friday. Because in order to get people like Star Trek fans buzzing about Lego, they released a special item that you can only get with a purchase on Black Friday, which was the Star Trek shuttle pod.
Oh, that's right.
They released the shuttle pod. I saw
that. And you can't get it now?
No, because the Lego basically said this is their teaser for their big initiative, because not only are they going to release Star Trek the Enterprise D, but they're going to actually focus in the future more with Star Trek. Because that was that's why they made the big surprise announcement that, oh, Black Friday sales, because Lego does this every year where they do like these special one-time Black Friday sets that you can only get on Black Friday that kind of allude to like where they're going with a lot of their future sets. They always put out Star Wars. They put out Knights. This particular year, they released the Star Trek shuttle pod to everyone's dismay and horror, because they could only get the shuttle pod on Black Friday. So like I have, because I'm a big toy collector and everything, I had this so much fun just watching people's minds explode on the collector forums, because everyone bum rushed the Lego site and crashed it. Because all you have to do to get the shuttle pod, Mike, is make a purchase. That's all you had to do.
Why didn't you send me a message, David?
I didn't know it. I didn't know it because they don't make the announcement what the set is till Black Friday hits. So when they made the announcement, everyone bum rushed it, because if you just spent like $5, yes, you could get a shuttle pod, and it's a decent sized shuttle pod.
Oh, I'm sure it'll be on eBay next week for $3,000. So David, Star Trek, Jeri Ryan explains why she was cool with 7 of 9's sexy cat suit on Voyager.
Because it is cool.
And in parentheses, it says at least at the time. You know what?
You want to kill people.
Yeah. Well, listen, there was a writer named Zadie Smith who I dig. She was doing some interview with Terry Gross on NPR, and Terry Gross is the type of interviewer that has her own ideological mindset. And when she interviews, she really tries to push that on the interviewee. Listen, that's what a lot of interviewers do. I get it. You try to connect at a level that you're on so you can have a good conversation. And she was asking Zadie Smith about this book that she had written. And she specifically mentioned, because she was writing, I believe, in the Victorian era. And she asked her about her view on men and how they treated women at that time, and how men were largely misogynistic, and, you know, all the usual things that we've come to expect, David, in those types of conversations. And Zadie Smith said, well, I get what you're saying. However, I tend not to judge people in different times, in different decades, in different centuries, because we have to remember that what you're calling misogyny now was not misogyny then. We change, our attitudes change, not necessarily progress, because progress is a myth, but we change. Cultures veer this way and that. You know, you have an influx of certain individuals coming to a country. It changes the ideology, the zeitgeist. Things happened. People have new viewpoints. What was doesn't necessarily mean it was wrong of those people, because that was the time period. Now, obviously, there are very specific things that were clearly unethical. But largely speaking, to say something that someone did at a time in the 90s as being misogynistic is a little silly and a little disingenuous if you agree with it, because there are things that are obviously were okay at that specific time. If they weren't, then you would probably point to each woman who willingly wore whatever cat suit, bikini you want to point to and say a man did this, but they're also free agents. Those people have autonomy and they make their own choices. They have managers, they have agents, they have people who help them, tell them what to do. They are buffers. So if they don't want to do something, they will create an excuse. There's a whole ecosystem to protect people from doing things they don't want to do. So if an actor chooses to wear a cat suit, that means it's A-okay with them.
Yes. And that's the thing that
no one held her down and forced her to wear a cat suit.
That's the thing that I don't, I've listened to the interview that you're talking about with Zadie Smith, and it's really refreshing to hear input like that, because like so many people nowadays just immediately take their own moment, their own life right now, the trendy cultural moment, and judge the past using the trendy moment as the baseline. That's ass backwards thinking. You cannot think that basically because how we have evolved up to this point, we need to judge the past. Because without the past, you would not be where you are today. Yeah, those things in the past, we look back at it and say, that's kind of cringeworthy, right? But without those moments, we don't adapt and we don't evolve into proper way of thinking.
Yeah. Now, Jeri Ryan was not complaining about her suit. She says she liked it. She had a pretty good reason why. She says, I was involved in all the costume fittings, all of the discussions. I knew what this was, and I was okay with the costume. I knew it was sexy. I knew what they were going for. I was okay with that because the way the character was written, and bear in mind, this was the 90s, guys, because the way the character was written, she was the complete antithesis of this. She was not that cat suit. So what she's saying is that intellectually, she was not that suit. That they wrote her as a very dynamic, multifaceted character.
Yes.
That ended up being, I love Janeway, but in a lot of ways, she drove the stories.
She drove the story.
The stories over the second half of the run of the show. Yes, Kate Mulgrew was amazing, and she's probably my favorite character in that show.
Oh, yeah.
Just amazing moments for her. But
Seven Story.
Yes. And also, of course she knew it was sexy. Of course she knew what they were going for because they were trying to help and save the show in those ratings. So they said, let's infuse a little bit of sex botness. Let's make the Star Trek nerds go crazy.
But the genius of that character is just like what you said. They could have just made her into a sex bot and just basically focused on that. But instead, they made the character the antithesis of what she looks like. They made her smart. They made her thoughtful.
How many times have we said in our shows that she is in the same category as Spock,
Data,
Odo? I can go on and on with these different characters. Every Star Trek series has that one character that helps you explore the meaning of what it means to be human. And 7 of 9 was that character, along with actually the Doctor.
Yeah.
Jesus. I mean, the two of them together just.
Oh, the best stories. We got stories.
Some of the best human Star Trek stories in the franchise's 60-year life. So I'm glad she defended it. I don't understand why people complain. There can't be any men complaining about this because, and if you are, you're not being truthful. You're not watching. I find it completely impossible. I've watched Voyager 1,000 times. And even when she, I still, like, man, she's hot. I never grow tired.
Oh, something grows.
It's so stupid. I guess what I'm saying is that we are human beings, and let's not pretend that we're not biologically wired in this way. We like pretty. We like sexy. And that's not just men. Women do as well. Why do you think certain novels are so successful? They just their idea of sexy, their idea of what gets them going is different than men.
Yes.
But they, it's the, still the same thing.
It's still at its core. It's sex driving the sale.
When you have 50-year-old women screaming and throwing their panties at that poor kid that played in Twilight, that's Batman now, Pattinson. He's 20 some years old, and you have 50-year-old women throwing panties and expressing their love to him. We're all the same.
Yeah.
I'm not saying any of it is necessarily great, but I think we can all understand why she was put in a cat suit, and that we can also understand that it's okay. It's not the end of the world. It's not degrading. It just is what it is. It was a marketing gimmick because sex sells, big boobs, and an ass sell.
Well, here's the thing, too. The biggest thing about the Jerry Ryan interview that I thought was really telling was she was okay with it. She was not forced to do it.
Yeah.
And
no one was holding her down.
No one was
shoving her body.
Cat suit. Yeah. She was okay with it.
She wasn't incapacitated. She wasn't given date rape drug. And then while she was asleep, they put the cat suit on her and said, all right, guys, roll camera as soon as she wakes up.
And to those people out there that want to rally against the visual of Seven of Nine, I throw this word out to those people. Jerry Ryan had consent. So in a way, if she consents,
There should be no discussion.
It's
done.
Yeah. Of course, people will always say that, oh, well, this still bothers me. Okay, you're allowed your opinion.
I've never understood those things. Why people get offended by something as natural as the female body. I don't understand that.
If
you're purposely exploiting a woman, that's not what I'm talking about. That's totally different.
Exactly. That is different. That's basically exploitation. If you're actually admiring the female form or even the male form, I'm bisexual. I can say that, but like the form in general, it's basically it breaks down, and I've used this example to people. It's like looking at a piece of art. You're looking at the form of that person as a piece of art. And there's nothing wrong with that because we look at beauty every day. But unfortunately, nowadays, I've noticed that people don't like looking at beauty because it's too introspective. Because people get bothered. They say, well, if that thing's beautiful, well, look at me. And it's like, why are you comparing yourself to it? Don't compare yourself to it. Admire it. Enjoy it for what it is.
So what you're saying, David, is people's morality that they subscribe to is largely based on resentment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Especially nowadays.
That's what it comes down to, David. Do you get what I'm saying, though?
No, yeah, like, I do.
It's why I complain about Jason Momoa and Aquaman. I'm like, they shouldn't have him shirtless. It's because I'm resentful. Talk about sexual exploitation. Have you guys seen Aquaman? The opening movie is basically him asking every woman, do you want to have sex with me? When he says permission to come aboard and he makes that eye, what do you think he's saying to all the women out there who were obsessed with him at that time?
Exactly.
This is why I say, David, and I will always stand by it, that morality doesn't exist. Morals are not just somewhere to be discovered. We create them based on our own ideas of what's good and bad, largely based and formed because of our own resentments.
Yes.
So, all right. On that note, David, I guess it's time to end our Star Trek discussion. I am excited for 2026. I'm nervous.
That's what I was going to say. I'm nervous.
I'm nervous when it comes to Starfleet Academy, but everything else, I'm very anxious to see what we're going to be getting. I'm sure we'll learn a whole lot more about the upcoming movie that's coming out. Also all of the 65th anniversary celebrations they have planned, all the different events, merchandising, and we'll go through them throughout the year during our discussions. As they are released, we'll remind people of them. Specifically, David, you and I need to track down some Legos.
Mike, I don't think I can murder people enough.
And I'm gonna do a layaway plan. Do they still do layaway?
Layaway?
Is Kmart around? That's where I used to buy Legos when I was a kid.
Oh God, now I feel really old.
In the blue light special, remember? Kmart. All right, I'll talk to everybody next year. Bye, Dave.
Bye. Live long and prosper.
I couldn't help but notice your pain.
My pain?
It runs deep. Share it with me.
End simulation.